Welcome. This talk is about the eight bodhisattvas, the exemplars of the results of the bodhisattva path. Picture on the handout has Shakyamuni Buddha with the eight surrounding him, but they're not in quite standard form, so I, for one, cannot tell which of the eight a given image is. But all eight are there, and they represent the cream of the crop when it comes to 10th level bodhisattvas. There are nine previous stages to the stage they've reached, and when a bodhisattva reaches the 10th stage, it's tantamount to being a Buddha. The difference between a 10th stage bodhisattva and a Buddha is very subtle indeed. Some of the bodhisattvas in the eight are quite familiar. There's Chenrezig, the bodhisattva of love and compassion. And he represents the love of Shakyamuni. You have love, wisdom, and power. So the love is represented by Chenrezig, by Avalokiteshvara, Guanyin. The wisdom by Manjushri, and the power by Vajrapani. So those three of the eight are the key three in the retinue of Shakyamuni Buddha. The figure of Avalokiteshvara, of Chenrezig, the love and compassion of Buddha is emphasized partly because that's what's most needed in this particular world, is some love and compassion. And likewise, the wisdom and power of the awakened one are also needed. Then let's see, who else do we have of the eight? There's the two twins, Akashagarbha, space womb, and Kshitigarbha, earth womb. And these are major bodhisattvas as well. And then there's Samantabhadra, Maitreya, and the obscurest of the lot is called Sarva Nivarana Vishvakami. I should say a little bit about the path that leads up to 10th level bodhisattva consciousness. It starts out where we are, on what is called the path of accumulation. And on the path of accumulation, we gather merit and wisdom. We do practices, we do virtuous deeds in order to generate merit, and we study and discuss in order to generate wisdom. And the story goes, when you have piled up enough merit and enough compassion, then you can go to the next stage, which is the yogic path, the path of linking. And on this stage, it's very intense practice. It's divided up into four parts. The first part is called heat, and they describe that as the warmth of the distant sun of the Dharma beginning to warm the bodhisattva on the path. I suspect that it has to do with the fact that yoga in the practice sense generates heat. They call it tapas in Hindu. So that the heat that's being described is the heat that comes from intense practice. So you have heat, summits, patience, and supreme mundane dharmas as the four parts of the yogic path. And the intense practice generates the heat. The summits are the pinnacle of heat that you arrive at, the pinnacle of practice, the awakening, the place where the crazy wisdom comes in. And then patience is the wherewithal to completely repeat that path from the base of the mountain, the heat, up through the pinnacle of the mountain, summits. So patience is repeating summits again and again until we reach the ability to leap into emptiness. In any case, we keep trying that intense practice off and on, and then more on than off, one would hope. And eventually you break through to the summit, and then a jump to the supreme mundane dharmas. And at that point, you're at what is called the top of the world. The Lokekagra Dharma are the phenomena of the outer rim of samsara. It's the cushiest place in samsara. It's the top of the world. And from there, it's only a little bit of a jump into emptiness, which gets you to the path of seeing. And this path of seeing, this darshana marga, is where you need to get in order to perceive the entire path. They say, until that moment, that's a moment of illumination. That's a moment of awakening. And when that moment arrives, you totally understand the Four Noble Truths in their extreme detail and in their deep meaning. And you realize emptiness for the first time. We spend a lot of time in these groups discussing emptiness and suchness and such abstruse things. But when it comes down to realization, it's very nitty-gritty. It's, toes in the mud, feet on the ground. Realization is different from theory. Anyway, this is the place we hope to get to. And once we arrive at the path of seeing, then we're bodhisattvas for the first time. Up to that time, we're only the followers of bodhisattvas. And when we reach the path of seeing, that's the first bhumi, the first bodhisattva stage. And upon arriving at the first bhumi, one becomes arya, noble, outside of the world, beyond the world system, out of samsara. And then it's a long, long, long journey from stage one to stage 10. Involving all kinds of experiences and the amplification of the raising of the consciousness, the energy of the ability to help other people, to help other beings, grows as the stages of the bodhisattva path grow. And it's an exponential increase of consciousness. If the path of seeing, the first bhumi, is worth 10 units of consciousness, say, then the second path, the path of the ethics, is worth 100. And the third path, the path of patience, is worth 1,000. So it amplifies that way. By the time you get to the 10th path, it's essentially infinity. And these eight bodhisattvas are on the 10th stage. I'm especially fond of the most obscure of the lot, because I just discovered him. It's Sarvanivarana Vishvakambin. To me, that bodhisattva is the key to practice. Nivarana is the word in Sanskrit and Pali that refers to the obstructions to enlightenment. And they're also the obstructions to good meditation. So you often find references to the to these five obstructions in the meditation manuals. And let's see, portmanteau did. It's like if you say sense desire, we'll start with laziness. You say laziness, sense desire, hostility, distraction, and doubt. And that's worth unpacking. And unpack it in the same way, worth memorizing. I'm working on it. It's like... if you say faith, vigor, mindfulness, concentration, and wisdom, you could unpack that for half an hour easily. I mean, it's a very deep teaching, but it helps to memorize them if you can condense them into something. And these five obstacles that every meditator wrestles with indefinitely is laziness, sense, desire, hostility, distraction, and doubt. And these are the five nirvarana. And Sarvanivarana Vishkambin erases, he dissolves those five obstacles. And those are the things that are keeping us from our enlightenment. You know, if we were rid of all five of those things, laziness, sense desire, hostility, distraction, and doubt, then we would be completely clear and the infinity of the Dharma would flow through us without obstruction. That's the wish. The on-the-ground reality of it is we have to wrestle in our meditation with each of those obstructions. You know, at different times and different people may emphasize one or the other of the different different obstructions which occur at different times with different people. I've been wrestling with the doubt one lately. But we've got all five present, and it's a struggle, but we have to do what we can to at least lessen the impact of those five. So, you know how you have to keep repeating things to make sense of them. Laziness, again, I have to use my own case. I could meditate a lot more than I do. I've got the time. I've got some of the energy, but I don't do it all the time. Likewise, sense desire, well, it can go from passion and lust down to the simple sense desire for wanting to hear that beautiful tune again, or to look at that marvelous flower. You know, that too is a sense desire. And in fact, if you examine your sensorium, your sensory process, you notice that it's nonstop, that the senses just continue grinding out these impressions, one after the other, good, bad, and indifferent. And, you know, that's our situation in samsara. And so the desire for sensory experience, you know, be it whatever sort, distracts us from our inner Buddha nature. Similarly, hostility, well, clearly, how much evil is in the world because of hostile intentions and hostile actions? And if you examine inwardly the times of being angry, you know, what use is that? It puts a bunch of adrenaline in the bloodstream. It makes us feel bad. You know, and then if we act on our anger, it may make other people feel bad too. So it's not a good thing, but dissolving it is no easy matter. My experience with my own resentment and rage is that I can clear it up for a while, and then sooner or later a deeper level of the same resentment comes up, and then I have to work on clearing it up again. And that's the way it is with all the obstructions. You know, the laziness, getting up in the morning, not laying around in bed too long. Little things like that decrease the laziness. And the hostility, the work on the hostility is ongoing. You know, we have greed, hate, and confusion. And every person has one of those as primary. You know, most of us intellectual types are hate types. The people that love following rules and having eloquent situations, following precepts in their great detail, they tend to be greed types that are transformed by the Dharma. And then my type is delusion type, which is the hardest of the lot to deal with. I have spilt more than one tear over the fact of being a delusion type, because I get off, way off sometimes, and I have to bring back to the center, you know, stay anchored in the present moment in order to dispel the fog of the delusion in order to, you know, achieve a moment of awakening. And then each moment is different. For me, the process is to work with each moment and to try to perceive clearly what is present in that moment, and then to accept it as a full reality and then let go of it, and then the next moment arises. That's an ideal state of mind to be in. You know, most of the time we're not, but that's the one of the good things about studying the more advanced stages of the path, because we are given every once in a while a glimpse of such things. Even people that are not on a spiritual path can spontaneously arrive at a moment of cosmic consciousness. Usually they forget about it because they don't have any construct to put them in. You know, it's just a sudden awakening to the vastness of the cosmos. You know, even your average food service worker can get that once in a while. But it never lasts. And the effort with spiritual practice is exactly to increase the duration and frequency of moments of awakening. And to the extent that we can do that, to that extent we make spiritual progress. I want to focus on these eight guys. What else about Sarva Nivarana Vishvakambin? He's royal blue, seated on a lotus, and he often holds the lotus flower with a sun disc, and he's white in the role of relieving calamities, and yellow if his role is to provide sufficient provisions. And I probably got to be careful about this. All these guys have mantras, and the mantras are on the web, so in a sense they're public domain, but mantras are supposed to be kept secret, so I'll have to kind of gloss over that. But Sarva Nivarana Vishkamin's mantra goes, Namah Samanta Buddhanam A Satvahita Bhutgata Tram Tram Ram Ram Swaha, which is a pretty good mantra. You know, it's one worth working on. Then the two twins. When I started this project with the eight, I hung up on Akashagarbha immediately. I don't understand Akashagarbha's energy very well. His name means space womb, just as his twins means earth womb. And they gloss it as the storage, the treasure house of space. And he purifies transgressions, also known as Chakrapani, wheel in the palm. Green or blue with a halo, wearing a night robes. And one of his iconographic forms is as a fish standing on the fish in the ocean. And then more commonly sitting in meditation posture. I saw one image of him on Google Images. You can Google these guys separately, but what you get is a mix of bodhisattvas, so it's hard to find a good picture of each of these eight. But it's in there. They just jumble it up pretty good. Akashagarbha carries a sword for cutting through negative emotions, which are the afflictions that, again, block our access to the intrinsic enlightenment and awakening that are the heritage of being a human being. Akashagarbha is very big in East Asia, as is Kshitigarbha. Kukai, the founder of Shingon, which is Buddhist, Japanese Eastern Tantra is what Shingon is. And he was a devotee of Akashagarbha. And strangely enough, Nichiren Daishonin, that working-class rebel that was born on the coast in a fishing village to very poor fishermen. There was a temple near there that had Akashagarbha statue in it. And so he was an early devotee of Akashagarbha. And then later he decided to attack the Zen people, the Pure Land people, and the feudal government of Japan. And they sentenced him to death, took him to the beach to chop off his head. And as the executioner was ready to chop off his head, a meteor appeared in the sky and freaked out the executioner so bad that he refused to carry out the execution. And Nichiren was banished to an obscure island, Sado Island, off the coast of Japan. But he was a devotee of Akashagarbha, for whatever that may be worth. You know, he's the one that started the Namyoho Renge Kyo movement. Anyway, that's Akashagarbha, the space twin. The earth twin, Kshitigarbha, is very popular in China and Japan. It's said that he symbolizes the virtue of filial piety, which is a major Confucian virtue in China. And filial piety has to do with taking care of your parents and the rest of your family. And in the story of Kshitigarbha, the bodhisattva was once a young Brahmin girl, and the girl's mother was very irreligious, impious. And so when she died, she was born into a hell realm. And the daughter found out about that and vowed to save her mother from the hell realms. And then, since she was a bodhisattva, she realized she had to save all beings from the hell realms and became Kshitigarbha and has been doing that ever since. And in Japan, Kshitigarbha is called Dizang in China. So Namo Daya and Dizang Wang Pusa is to invoke Kshitigarbha, the earth store bodhisattva, the earth treasury bodhisattva, earth womb. In Japan, he's called Jizo, and is especially involved with children, and especially with children that have died young. So he's very popular in Japan for that reason, because he's a protector of children. I had a run around, a major go-around with the Dizang Sutra when I was studying Chinese Buddhism. And the Dizang Sutra is actually not super good writing. It's all right, you know, it's a decent sutra. But it's not elegant and eloquent like the Sarangama Sutra, say, or the Avatamsaka Sutra. It's a little bit pedestrian in a certain way. But I studied it a lot, and I dug around in the Chinese Tripitaka, the three-basket textual legacy in China. It was published in Japan under the name Taisho Isaikyo, and it's a set of books, yay, wide on the shelf, with very thin paper. And the university library had a copy of it, so I was in there digging through it every once in a while. And, you know, it was hard to navigate in because I don't know that much Buddhist Chinese, but I was able to fish around in there. And one of the things I was able to fish out was a mantra of Kshitigarbha. And the drawback, if you fish out a mantra from the text, you know, there's a vast array of writings in the text that seldom surface. In Tibet, they keep all the sutras and shastras on the altar behind the Buddha image and rarely access them. So I wonder who reads the sutras in Tibet, but they're there. And by the same token, in that Chinese Tripitaka, there's all the sutras you could imagine, but who reads them, I don't know. Anyway, I dug around, found a mantra for Kshitigarbha, and if you extract a mantra from the textual corpus, it may not be activated. A mantra is active when a lot of people chant it, and a mantra is inactive if nobody chants it. So, as far as I know, I'm the only one that chants this mantra yet. But it these things come back. They come and go in strange patterns. But the mantra goes, Nan samando motonan ha 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 ma sa we sa wa. Nan samando motonan ha ha we sa we sa wa. Nan samando motonan ha we sa we sa wa. And I don't know what the Sanskrit for that is. That's the Chinese transliteration of it. But the idea is to invoke the energy of Dizong, the energy of Kshitigarbha, who raises the energies out of the denseness of the earth towards the energy of his twin Akashagarbha, who is subtle indeed, like a cloudy sky. And then beyond the clouds is the empty ether. That's all I can think of saying about Kshitigarbha right now. So far, what have we got? We have the big three, love, wisdom, and power, Chenrezi, Manjushri, and Vajrapani. And then we have the twins, Akashagarbha, Space Treasury, and Kshitigarbha, Earth Treasury. And then we have Maitreya and Samantabhadra. Maitreya is now resident in the Tushita heaven, which is one of the heavens of the Kamadhatu. It's actually the cushiest of the heavens of the desire realm. And they have very long lives in Tushita. The Buddha's mother, after she died in childbirth, went to Tushita. And there's a story about him going to Tushita to instruct her in the Dharma. So Maitreya is now at Tushita and is expected to be reborn after Shakyamuni Buddha's Dharma completely dies, which will be a while yet. But the Dharma, like everything born in time, dies in time. And so eventually the Dharma will be entirely forgotten. But Maitreya will be the fifth Buddha in the thousand Buddha reign of this eon. So it's a very auspicious eon because 1,000 Buddhas will be born in it, and Maitreya will be number 5. Shakyamuni Buddha was number 4. And I have not yet found out the names of the first 3. If you like mythology, you look for things like that. Okay, now we come to Samantabhadra. And that's expanding right now. Jamyang is giving lectures on the Samantabhadra aspiration, which is the prayer that's to be found in the Avatamsaka Sutra about Samantabhadra's 10 vows, and I wrote them down here. His 10 vows, which a lot of people try to adhere to, firstly, to pay homage and respect to all Buddhas. Secondly, to praise the Tathagata, the Thus Come One, that's the Buddha, to make abundant offerings, to repent of misdeeds. In other words, we not only don't do it anymore, but we regret that we did it. And, you know, some of these rascals still have smiling faces, but mostly we repent of doing whatever we did. To rejoice in others' merits and virtues, certainly. And the less that you may care for a given person, the more important it is to rejoice in that person's merits and virtues. Because if you look deeply and closely, you'll find that, yeah, they have a lot of them. You know, everybody does if you look closely. Okay, request the Buddhists to continue teaching. Yeah, request the Buddhists to remain in the world. This is a part of the seven-branch prayer, actually. Mm-hmm. Then, eighthly, to follow the teachings of the Buddhists. Now, here I could go on and on, except that I don't do it any more than the next practitioner does it, as best we can. Of course, to follow the teachings of the Buddha, considering the Tripitaka is that big in Chinese, and it's being translated completely into English. A group out of Taiwan, I think it is, or Japan. It's Japan that they're cranking out these translations of all of the sutras in the Tripitaka, and it's a huge project. It'll be going on for decades, but they've started putting the entire Tripitaka into English. So following the teachings of the Buddha entails first finding out what the teachings are, and I gotta thank Dr. Kanzi for setting us on that course, because on the course of 2 years of studying the Perfection of Wisdom Sutras with Kanzi, it slowly dawned on me that the key to the Dharma is the numerical lists of the doctrine, and that if you find like that one that we just examined, laziness, sense desire, hostility, distraction, and doubt. You know, in a 24-hour day, we're in all five of those states at different times. So it's a teaching to follow, a teaching to work with. And that does entail, as usual, a daily meditation if you can do it. 10 minutes a day in the morning, 20 minutes is better. Anam Thubten advised meditating 3 times a day. You know, because these obstructions are gradually ameliorated by the process of good meditation. So, yeah, I don't want to get on the podium yet again. So then follow the teachings of the Buddhas, difficult but possible. Accommodate and benefit all living beings. You know, that can go deep too. Is how do I benefit that person over there that I had a rough time in childhood with? Well, now I can do that. But then there's the next obstacle. What about that person that did such and so? Can I forgive that? Can I accommodate and benefit that being in spite of whatever the event was? And then finally, the 10th one, to dedicate all merits and virtues to the enlightenment of all beings. So that's Samantabhadra's 10 vows. I should say it's got an interesting form, very full of light and radiance. He rides an elephant with 6 tusks. The 6 tusks represent the 6 perfections. So again, you can consider that these 8 bodhisattvas are exemplars of the following of the path to its end, which is enlightenment. And the obstacles on the path gradually transmute and eventually clear up. The 6 tusks on the elephant, all these mythological figures have symbolical meanings. And you don't fully understand a mythological image until you begin to understand what it refers to in the real world. Because mythology is metaphor about things that can't be spoken of directly. And in the case of Samantabhadra's mythology, there's also Buddha Samantabhadra. And especially in Nyingma, Buddha Samantabhadra is considered to be the primordial Buddha. Is that figure with the first condensation of the luminous emptiness into conscious sentience, if you will. And Samantabhadra is dark blue, the color of space. So Samantabhadra is the blue of space. Samantabhadri, his consort, is the white light radiance. And their combination in Yabyun is a symbol of the luminous emptiness, the darkness of empty space combined with the radiance of consciousness in one symbol. Bodhisattva Samantabhadra has the same name. I wonder about how deep the connection goes, but there is a connection there, of course. All right, we're on the home stretch. We got love, wisdom, and power. And then we have the two twins, Space Treasury and Earth Treasury. And we have Samantabhadra and Maitreya and Sarva Nivarana Vishvakambin. And then there's the three, Vajrapani, Manjushri, and Avalokiteshvara. Vajrapani means Vajra in the palm. In the case of Vajrapani, he holds the Vajra up like this in his palm. And he has a lasso for lassoing recalcitrants in his other hand. And I don't know the mudra for that one, but it's common. Well, none of this is common. Vajrapani is a symbol of psychic power. And so his business is pretty secret. He's called the Lord of Secrets. He gives the power to defeat Mara, the evil one, and all the demons and devils. Psychic power is problematic because if you wield it wrongly, you can generate a whole lot of bad karma really quick. So again, the details of Vajrapani's presence are a little bit obscure. You usually see him standing, sometimes with Avalokiteshvara on the other side of Shakyamuni in the early days. And from the early days, I hope this is orthodox, I've never heard it actually stated, but I suspect that Vajrapani may be a reflection of that original disciple of the Buddhas called Mahamoggallayana, who was of all the disciples of the Buddha, he was the one that most noted for psychic power. You know, he'd say stuff like, well, do you want me to turn the universe inside out and upside down now? And, well, that won't be necessary right now, you know, that sort of thing. But Mahamoggallayana was able to do all these fantastic magical feats, and Vajrapani has the same energy. So is it the same being? I wouldn't know for sure, but I suspect. In that case, Avalokiteshvara may really be Shariputra in a new form. Again, I don't know. I've never heard it stated that way, but it's not impossible. So, Vajrapani, all hush hush. Manjushri, gentle glory, Bodhisattva wisdom. His mantra is Om Arapatsana Di. And he's orange, or at least the main icon of him is orange. I should mention that with the iconography and the mythology both, there are variations and variations and variations on variations. So these individual beings have a frequency and they have a lot of different manifestations. So Manjushri's manifestations, the primary one is the orange Arapatsana Di Manjushri. But there's a black Manjushri and some other, I think a gold one maybe. He carries the wisdom sword in one hand, and it said the wisdom sword is what the sword that cuts into one, which is part of the total paradox of anything like real wisdom. For some reason, spiritual wisdom generates paradox. So that's the paradox, the sword cuts into one. He discriminates what is to be adopted and what is to be abandoned. And then there's Avalokiteshvara, Guanyin, Chenrezig. The insight from imaging oneself as a bodhisattva of compassion, I find my life is more content. I'm a happier person. Just for the chanting in Tibetan and English about compassion. And Chenra Z's energy reaches everywhere. I have a notion that since green Tara does not exist in China, and in China Chenra Z is called Guan Yin and is female, and Avalokiteshvara is male, and his name means he who looks down from on high, that Lord, something of the sort. So he's the Lord that looks down from on high and sees the suffering of the world, and then has compassion on the world. Guan Yin, Guan Shi Yin Pu Sa is her name in China, is she who hears the sounds of the world and goes to rescue the suffering beings that she's heard. So what I think happened is mythological, symbolical, archetypal forms are very amorphous. Well, not amorphous, but they morph, they change. And I think what happened is the image of Tara and Chenra Z morphed in China. China needed a strong goddess figure at the time. And so the figure of Guan Yin emerged as Chenra Z in a female form. And then she also picked up some local goddess stuff about fishermen and storms at sea. And in fact, Chenra Z Guan Yin has a residence in the South China Sea known as Patala Island. So there's something with Guan Yin and the ocean of compassion, if you will. And in China, they say, Namo Dasher Da Be Guan Shi Yin Pu Sa, which means homage to Chenra Z, who is mercy and compassion. So all these things interconnect. And I'll end with Akasha Garba's Shingon mantra for some reason. It goes, Om Vajra Ratna Om Trach Svaha. Again, pretty good mantra. That's Akasha Garba, space womb. Om Vajra Ratna Om Trach Svaha. And again, Shingon people probably wouldn't like having their mantras released, but it's on the web, so why not?